and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Dan Friedel reports on the Nobel Prize in Literature. Mario Ritter Jr. has a story about how immigrants in the U.S. are more hopeful about the future than American-born citizens. Brian Lynn reports on how many girls around the world are not using the internet. Next, Gina Bennett has a story on a project in Cuba that combines fishing and farming. Later, John Russell presents the Everyday Grammar lesson on grammar and uncertainty. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
The Swedish Academy awarded this year's Nobel Prize in Literature to a Norwegian known for considering life's basic choices in his 40 years of work. 64-year-old Jan Fosse was first published in the 1980s and became well known in the 1990s. His works include a play called Someone is Going to Come, which was performed to praise in Paris in 1999. Later, he wrote a series of books called The Septology, which he finished in 2021. The last part of Septology, called A New Name, was a finalist for the Booker Prize in 2022. Fosse created plays, books, and children's books. He also worked on a translation of the Bible into Norwegian. He is known for writing in the Nynorsk language, which is understandable to all Norwegians, but it is used by only 10% of the nation's 5.4 million people. Swedish Academy member Anders Olsson said Fosse's work has had a universal impact. The Academy also called his work innovative and noted his ability to give voice to the unsayable. The group explained that his books discuss life's deepest feelings about things like life and death. Fosse said he had been thinking he might be awarded the prize for the last 10 years, but he was still surprised to get the phone call on Thursday. He told a Swedish broadcaster, "I've been part of the discussion for 10 years and have prepared myself for 10 years that it could happen." He told a Norwegian broadcaster, "He has no more prizes left to win. Everything will be downhill from now on." He noted that he started writing as a boy, and his first work came out 40 years ago. "I don't plan to compete with myself," he said. The writer added he will celebrate the prize calmly with his family. Fosse said 1969 Nobel Literature Prize winner Samuel Beckett of Ireland influenced his writing style. Beckett wrote the play Waiting for Godot. Guy Pusey is a teacher of Scandinavian studies at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. He called Fosse's writing sparse and said his simple expressions take on a lot deeper meaning. The Associated Press notes critics might call Fosse a safe choice for his highbrow writing only known to people in small literary circles. The Academy has been criticized for being too centered on men from Northern Europe and North America. That includes criticism from Annie Ernaux, last year's winner. Only 17 of 119 winners have been women. Recent winners who have been popular writers include Mario Vargas Llosa of Peru, Kazuo Ishiguro of Japan, and Alice Munro of Canada. The Academy got a lot of attention for choosing American musician Bob Dylan in 2016. Supporters say recent winners, including Dylan, show that the Nobel Committee is interested in writers who are both popular and praised by critics. Foss's publisher says his work has been translated into 40 languages, and his plays have been produced over 1,000 times, and he is the fourth Norwegian to win the prize, but the first since 1928. I'm Dan Friedel.
Immigrants in America are more hopeful about the future than citizens who were born in the United States. That is what a recent opinion study of 3,358 immigrant adults found. The study, or survey, aimed to find out what the immigrant adults thought about a number of issues. Shannon Schumacher is a researcher at KFF, a nonprofit organization based in San Francisco that works with health policy. It was formerly known as the Kaiser Family Foundation. She described what the immigrants told her this way. They said, "You know, I face challenges here in the U.S., but it's far better than where I came from, and I have this belief that things will be better for my children." Schumacher added, "Whether that's their education, their safety, their economic opportunities, they think that they're better off and their children are better off." The survey was a partnership between KFF and the Los Angeles Times newspaper. The organizations carried out the study between April 10th and June 12, 2023. The immigrants answered questions by telephone, mail, and online. The questions could be answered in any of the 10 most commonly spoken languages in the United States. They include English, Spanish, Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese, Portuguese, Haitian Creole, Arabic, French, and Tagalog. Schumacher said it is the most complete survey of immigrants in the U.S. today. The survey can really help inform the public more about immigrants and really bring their voices to the forefront, she said. Schumacher added, "We don't actually hear about immigrants often in their own voices." Immigrants make up 16% of adults in the U.S. They come from many different countries and are from many classes of people. Their belief in a better future remains, although they face many difficulties. Most of the immigrants in the survey have jobs. About half said they have experienced discrimination in the workplace. 3 in 10 said they had been paid less for doing the same job or have had fewer opportunities to get a better job or increased pay compared to their U.S.-born co-workers. Healthcare can be another problem. 1 in 5 immigrants delayed or did not get health care in the past few years. Often, the reason is lack of money or health insurance. And if they see a medical worker, the experience is not always good. The survey said that Black and Hispanic immigrants face the most discrimination. Researchers worked with activist groups within the different immigrant communities to find people to talk to. The researchers said the English word discrimination was a problem because it does not always mean the same thing in different cultures and languages. People aren't sure what that means, Schumacher said. She added that they might use different words, or they say something that maybe we as researchers would say, oh, that's discrimination, but they call it bullying or someone just being mean. To deal with possible miscommunication, researchers asked direct questions to identify experiences that they defined as discrimination. They did this even if the survey subject did not call the experience discrimination. For example, the researcher might ask, "Have you ever been not paid for all the hours you've worked? Have you been harassed or threatened or been told to go back to your country?" I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
A new report suggests many girls across the world are not using the internet because of online abuse, discrimination, or other issues. The report was produced by a nonprofit group called Girl Effect. The organization carries out research and programs aimed at linking young girls to education, useful products, and technology. The effort was also supported by the Malala Fund, the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, and the Vodafone Americas Foundation. The report says many girls face numerous barriers to using the internet, especially on mobile devices. Girl Effect describes a situation on the internet that it says can favor boys over girls. It calls the situation a digital divide. The digital gender divide is real and is creating public spaces where women, especially girls, are being left behind, said Girl Effect Chief Executive Jessica Posner Adede in a statement. She added that girls are often told they are vulnerable, less competent, and unable to protect themselves online. The group's report said these kinds of statements can reshape girls' beliefs and opinions and prevent them from fully taking part in numerous online activities. This can severely limit the information they see and can block educational and job progress. Online abuse and concerns about internet safety have resulted in many girls setting up more protections and behaving more conservatively when connecting with others and sharing personal information online, the report said. The report is based on a public opinion study involving more than 10,000 boys and girls aged 14 to 21. A separate part questioned parents of the youth. Data was collected in 7 countries: Ethiopia, India, Jordan, Kenya, Nigeria, Rwanda, and Tanzania. Comparative data came from Britain and the United States. The report noted that women across low- and middle-income countries are 7% less likely than men to own a mobile phone and are 19% less likely to use mobile internet. The report suggests a digital gender divide exists, although governments worldwide have taken steps to prevent it. A UNICEF study released earlier this year showed that in 54 countries, there is a median gender ratio of 71. This means that for every 100 young boys and men who use the internet, only 71 young girls and women do. Recent studies have also shown that women experience more online abuse, persuading large numbers of girls to quit social media services such as Facebook and Instagram. The Girl Effect report found that among digitally connected youth, 12% more girls than boys said they feel self-conscious while using social media. The report also said girls are 11% less likely to place photos or comments online compared to boys of the same age. Mitali Nikor is a gender policy specialist at research group Nikor Associates based in New Delhi. She told the Thomson Reuters Foundation that girls who limit their online activity often carry this behavior with them into the workplace. This can lead to difficulties for women who might hold back in demonstrating their skills and building strategic connections, Nikor said. Nikor noted she thinks several things are needed to help solve the problems girls are facing. One is to improve the availability of mobile devices for girls and young women across the world. Other possible solutions include establishing more digital literacy programs and efforts to end gender-based discrimination. I'm Brian Lynn.
Cuba is undergoing economic crisis and shortages. This can make even simple efforts like fishing or farming complex. That is why two young Cuban businessmen decided to turn to aquaponics to get better results and increase the amount of food available on the island nation. Aquaponics is a practice that uses wastewater from fish farming to grow food plants in a soilless environment. It brings together fishing and farming in a way that is both efficient and environmentally friendly. Joel Lopez, co-owner of JoJo Aquaponics, said the practice is a perfect fit for Cuba. From fish to the production of food plants, everything is natural, he said, while showing visitors the building where JoJo Aquaponics farms outside of Havana, the capital of Cuba. At the end of the month, the harvest includes both a protein from the fish and a vegetable green, all without the use of expensive chemicals such as fertilizers and pesticides. Cuba is facing its worst economic downturn in many years. Shortages of food, medicine, and fuel have led the government to seek help from businesses in finding new solutions. But businesses face a difficult environment in Cuba. The trade ban enforced by the United States makes doing business complex. And the Cuban government only recently permitted private businesses. Jose Martinez is a co-owner of JoJo Aquaponics. He said aquaponics is costly and it has been difficult to raise money for the project. Martinez added that his business received some money from local government, though it was not enough. Even with the barriers, many Cubans increasingly believe private businesses will succeed in a country where the average person earns less than $20 a month. I'm Gina Bennett.
Consider an unusual time in your life. Perhaps your country was having a financial crisis or a political crisis. Perhaps one of your family members became sick. In other words, you were facing an uncertain situation. How do you talk about such situations? That question will be the subject of today's Everyday Grammar. You will learn about questions and answers. You will also learn about verbs and expressions used to talk about uncertainty. Let's start with some important terms and ideas. Uncertainty means that something is doubtful or unknown. And as the saying goes, life is full of uncertainties. We often ask friends, family, co-workers, or even strangers about their thoughts and expectations during uncertain times. There are two closely related questions we use in such situations. One involves will, and the other involves be going to. Although the questions have different wording, their meaning is the same. So we have,
what do you think will happen? What do you think is going to happen?
The structures of these questions are complex. We have the question word, what, the helping verb, do, the subject, you, the verb, think, and then the future marker, either will or be going to, along with happen. We can also make our questions more exact by adding a noun or noun phrase after the word to near the end of the question. So you might ask, what do you think will happen to? What do you think is going to happen to... If your country has an uncertain financial situation, you might ask one of the following questions.
What will happen to the economy? What is going to happen to the economy?
If your brother becomes sick, you might ask a doctor one of these questions.
What will happen to my brother? What is going to happen to my brother?
These questions are open-ended. In other words, you are asking the person to give an answer that includes a lot of information. We have explored questions about uncertainty. But how do we give answers? Answers could involve expressions, some specific verbs and adverbs, as well as phrasal verbs. In terms of expressions, a person might say,
I don't know. I have no clue.
Verbs that we might use include hope, think, or doubt. Listen to these sentences.
I hope the economy turns around quickly. I think the political disagreement will be solved quickly. I doubt the economy will continue to fall apart.
And in the case of adverbs, we might use likely or unlikely, as in the following sentences.
It is likely that the economy will crash. It is unlikely that the economy will crash.
With phrasal verbs, we might use look like, meaning to seem to be something because of appearances. So you might hear a person say,
It looks like the government is going to shut down. It looks like that politician is going to win the election.
In the examples, look like suggests that the speaker has formed an idea about the situation. When you say, it looks like something is going to happen, you are saying that you think something is likely to happen, even if the situation is uncertain. The next time you read the news or watch a movie, pay careful attention to how speakers talk about uncertainty. Do the speakers use some of the terms and ideas we explored today, or do they use different terms? With time, you will notice that uncertainty, and discussions about uncertainty, make up a large part of our lives. I'm John Russell.
Just heard this week's Everyday Grammar. John Russell joins us now to talk a little more about the lesson. Welcome, John.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on the show.
So why did you choose uncertainty as the subject of today's lesson?
I can give a general answer and a specific answer. The general answer is that uncertainty and discussions about uncertainty play a big part in our lives. We have all faced uncertain situations. We have all talked about uncertain situations with friends and family.
Yeah, that's true. And what was the specific answer to the question?
Well, last week there were uncertain times in the United States. As a result of a disagreement over financing, it looked like the government was going to shut down.
I noticed that you used one of the phrasal verbs from today's lesson. Look like.
That's right. The examples in the report gave it in the present. It looks like. But we can use it in the past as well. It looked like.
And it looks like the disagreements will continue into next month, when government financing will again be the subject of a vote in Congress.
That's right. And the outcome of the vote is uncertain.
So much uncertainty. Thanks for coming on the show today, John.
Thanks for having me. See you next time.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.